Welcome back to Hype Podcast, Hypeable.com's flagship show, where we bring you all the latest news in entertainment and pop culture every week. My name is Pamela, and I'll be your host today, and we have got another one of our signature hype specials for you guys this time around. If you have been absolutely loving A&E's brand new horror drama, Damien, then you are in luck, because we are about to dive headfirst into this series. Bradley James is on the show today, and we were so thrilled to get the opportunity to catch up with him. We actually brought a makeshift studio to him when I was out on the Fox lot screening the finale a couple of days ago, and we had a great time talking about season one as a whole. We talked, of course, about the finale, and we even got him to do his own Howie Hype segment towards the end of the interview, so that is what you're going to hear in the first half of this episode. And then the second half, which we recorded later, you'll hear me come back with another one of our hosts. We'll introduce her, and then she and I are going to take a deeper dive into that finale and kind of hash out everything that we saw, give our predictions for what we hope will happen next, because of course we're all crossing our fingers that Damien gets renewed for a season two. So with that being said, I would say to consider this your official spoiler warning. If you have not caught up on Damien yet, or maybe you missed Monday night's epic finale, please, please, please hit pause right now if spoilers are a thing you're worried about. Go catch up on the show and then come back and listen to our special, and that way you can avoid being spoiled on something you might not want to know before you get a chance to watch. Okay guys, we are almost ready to get started, but before we do want to remind you about all of our contact information in case you want to get a hold of us. For starters, you can always reach us via Twitter. We are at HypeableHype on there. We are also at HypeableHype on Instagram in case you want to follow along and see what the hosts are doing in between episodes. If you want to leave us rather lengthy comments, you can do so in two ways. For starters, you can leave comments in the show notes on hypeable.com, or you can reach us via email. And if you want to drop us a line that way, you can reach us at the email address hype@hypeable.com. Okay, guys, I guess that's it. So without further ado, please enjoy Hype Podcast's Damien special with our very special guest, Bradley James. How's it going?
It's going very well.
That's good.
This won't help your podcast audience, but I was looking down, and as soon as you said my name, I
you're like,
up
yes,
as if I was had been introduced to a crowd. And
wonderful, Bradley James, everybody.
I just couldn't help but play up to it.
I like it. I like it. It all helps, you know, in the grand scheme of audio. You want to paint the picture,
paint
so
the picture
to speak.
For your audience. Okay, very good.
Exactly. Have you ever done a podcast before?
Probably.
Okay,
without
cool.
Knowing it. So I feel like
there you go.
Podcasts are a thing now that you
they are.
Find yourself a part of without maybe knowing that's what you're doing.
Exactly.
However, you've spelled it out for me, so I'm clearly doing a podcast.
Exactly. There's no gimmicks. There's no secrets between us.
Right.
So let's talk about Damien, because like I said, we've been really enjoying it on Hypeable, which
fantastic.
Is it's very different from a lot of the roles that you've had in the past, which is awesome in my opinion. But what was it about the role that initially drew you in? Because I think a lot of people might not have thought, oh, Bradley James is going to go horror and he's going to like scare the pants off of us every week.
You've just alluded to it. I am someone who looks... I look for variety in projects that I do, and I found myself presented with quite a few things that I'd didn't have an interest in because they were too similar to things that I'd done, and then Damien came along, and I got very excited when I read the script, because I'd read other things that were different, but the writing hadn't been quite as captivating as what I, read with Damien. So I got very excited very quickly and very much wanted to take on a role that just allowed me to stretch myself in a different direction than I'd already done. And I think I'll always, try and pursue that, always sort of be looking for something different, because that's where the intrigue is as an actor, those different avenues that you can explore of yourself and create a character out of.
Very nice. And like in that sense, I mean, do you see acting as a never-ending passion of yours if you're still able to continue on and find new roles that are different from what you've done before?
I mean, there are that many people in the world. I think you I don't know if I'm speaking on behalf of all actors, but there's many fascinating people out there, And the idea of sort of turning yourself into one of those people for albeit a temporary amount of time, there's a lot of joy I get out of that exploration, and a lot of joy I get out of working with other actors. I think those two aspects of it, of exploring a character and then bouncing off of other people with that in that new skin, is a big part of acting for me.
I mean I can relate to that, because as a journalist, I mean, you seek out people's stories, and so for a week, for a month, for a couple months, you are able to kind of live their lives through them. So I mean, that's very insightful and totally understandable.
Right. It's I suppose in all walks of life, there are their own versions of variety that people look for.
Exactly.
Acting, I guess, is just maybe a slightly more clear cut if you make those decisions of trying to mix things up.
Definitely. And, you know, The Omen is such an iconic movie in and of itself. It kind of comes with its own built-in audience, especially if you have horror junkies that are maybe interested in something like Damien, because it is a continuation of something that they already love. So as an actor going into something like that, that is so established, I mean, is there a little bit of worry in the back of your mind thinking like, oh, I really need to do this justice so that those fans enjoy the continuation of their favorite thing?
I think you have that with every part. You don't have worry per se, or not directly linked with that. You have... you know, you set a standard for yourself that you want to try and meet, and I always try and set a high bar that would go for any character. I don't think you can actively go out and say, right, I'm going to please this set of fans. You can just do your job. You can do your job to the best of your ability, and that is hopefully going to be enough, because it really is all you can do. You can just, you know, you can't sort of... you can't aim for a result. You can only aim for, you know, the sort of detail, the finer details of what you're doing within that spectrum of creating a character and putting it on screen. But with the advantage with this story is that a lot of films that are converted into television shows tend to tell the story before you get to the movie, and this has gone in the other direction. We know the history already, from, you know, a lot of people aware of, as you say, a lot of people aware of The Omen, and we get a blank slate to take on the future of that story.
Yeah, and I mean, the nice thing is too is you don't necessarily have had to watch the original to get into this show, because I mean, I guess that's more of a testament to Glenn. He's done a great job of leaving things in but not making it feel like you're watching the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, they've certainly taken advantage of the footage of the original movie, but by no means do you miss out on anything by not having seen the film. And I'm very happy with this work. It's something that when I saw the finished article, I kind of just came away sort of with a slight glow, just being very pleased to have been a part of it. You know, every now and then you'll watch a film and you'll go, oh, I wish, you know, I would have loved to have had a part in that. You know, that was really good. And this is something for me that I can, you know, come away from and go, I'm very happy that I was part of that.
And I think you have a lot to be proud of, because you have really stretched yourself as an actor coming into something like this. There's a lot of really wonderful moments.
You're a charmer.
Oh, thank you. What was I going to say? I had a question, and then I just started charming the pants off of you.
You really
and I
did, just, yes.
You know,
look at me, I'm stark naked in this room.
Yes,
now.
Don't get us in trouble. You're going to get me in trouble.
Okay.
You're going to get yourself in trouble. So you were talking about how you were very, very proud of the work that you've accomplished in this series.
I'd maybe spread that in terms of the team as a whole.
The team as a whole, right.
Somewhat the guilt suddenly went straight through me for that being just a sole process. It's very much, continue.
But also for yourself, like, I mean, even like with what I do, it's a team effort. I work as a part of a team, but every once in a while you think like, man, that was really good. Good on you. You know, pat yourself on the back.
I think you know you're developing as a actors. I think show a very clear sign of development, and I am aware that that's an ongoing process. And I think for me, I can sort of see where I was, say, 10 years ago and go, okay, I have developed in the direction that I'd would have wanted to. And that's a large part of having worked with, you know, some of the great people I've had the chance to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And being put in an atmosphere where I was able to exercise my abilities, as it were.
It's a give and take.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Very much so.
So looking back on the whole series now, or not the series, but the season, see, you're British, so I say series.
I'm a spanner in the works. So
exactly. But I don't want to confuse our listeners and they're going to say, what do you know that we don't know? Yeah. In the context of season one, is there a particular scene that you were a part of that you were very proud of once you saw the finished product? Something that was maybe a little more challenging, and then you saw it and you were like, wow, that actually came across very nicely.
That's a good question. I think one of the... That is a good question. Singling out a particular scene is difficult. There was... I think one of the scenes that I sort of came away from both having shot it and watched it, there was a scene in, I think, episode 8 after Damien's duffed up Charles Powell, and he goes back to Dr. Matthews, and it's late at night, and you know he's sort of caught her just as she's probably on her way out or what have you, and he says, listen, I've done this thing, blah blah blah, and filming it, I just remember it was you know, you shoot these scenes however many times, and the energy levels for that scene are quite up there, and you know, sometimes you'll be on set and the crew will be talking about what's going for lunch or what's going to happen for lunch or what they've got planned for the weekend. For whatever reason, there was a sort of sensitivity around that scene where all the crew seemed to be aware of what was required. Mm-hmm. I got a real sense of team during that scene, which sounds really... I think that sounds a bit egocentric because it's essentially a scene that's mostly about me. But what I mean by that is I was happy with the scene and I came away being happy with the scene, but I became away, suddenly becoming aware of the reason I was able to get to where I wanted to get to that was because this atmosphere had been created by, you know, this team that I've been working with for a few months and they just seem to understand without me having to sort of say, go and stand in a corner and be quiet and what have you. There was just this atmosphere on set that just allowed that scene to happen. You don't always get that. Sometimes you can, you know, you don't always get a sensitive crew. But I think I just seem to remember sort of coming away from that and going, oh, I feel part of a family here. I feel part of, you know, a team that's trying to create something. I think that's a scene that stood out for me just for that reason. Then when I watched it, I was like, oh, that kind of came out, you know, how I'd hoped. And it was somewhat indicative of working together with, you know, the day to day, the you know, the cameraman, the sound guy, the you know, the prop department, all that, like that understanding that had built to that point. I'm rambling on here about this scene, but I think that was. I picked that one out because it sort of represents a lot of scenes where they were case sensitive.
Right, right. And I think that with a story like this, anytime you're stripping any character down or multiple characters down, it's important to have, you know, that kind of atmosphere that you're talking about in terms of the crew and things like that. And I know that you mentioned in the press-ish conference that we had before this that you pulled a lot from your own memory bank to bring Damien to life in terms of his struggles and stuff, which I can only imagine is very draining. So is there, how do you get out of that headspace after you're done with a scene? Is there something that you do in particular to kind of unwind from that?
Well, I think I dare say we've all had heightened sort of emotional moments in our life. I think and it's not so much a case of sort of like just walking around in that state the whole like even when the cameras aren't rolling. It's just about being susceptible to if that hits you in the scene. You get a lot of actors who build themselves up into a state. Someone says action, and then they're in this state and they're kind of afraid to let go of it. And I see that in, you know, performances and go, oh, that's not being very responsive to the moment. And I think, and that can then carry over afterwards because you built yourself up into that state and you almost carry it with you afterwards. I think there's a difference when you try and, when you're alive in the scene, you're not sort of like going, right, I have to be upset in this scene, so I'll get upset. And you know, you're in the scene, something happens and something triggers you. And a lot of that is in the preparation that you do. You have to, you know, connect triggers to those moments in your life. But then when they hit you, we've all, I think, had a good cry or a good laugh or something, and you get that out your system, and then it's released, it's out there, and your body can kind of let go. So I tend to go down that road as much as I can, because I prefer it. I think it's a bit more honest, it's a bit more truthful. And also it is, yeah, easier to let go after the scene, as opposed to working yourself up into a state and just trying to hold on to that state, because the pressure of holding on to that suddenly overtakes the actual playing of the scene and allowing whatever's happening in the scene to you know, for you to react to. It becomes harder to react to stuff because you're too busy focused on you know, being pent up or whatever it is.
Totally. And speaking of pent up situations, I do want to talk about episode 5 because that's my favorite episode of the whole season.
Yes.
It's so tragically beautiful. And I just love the way that you guys told that story and brought in a real life issue on many aspects, because you have the real life issue of a veteran that, you know, is not getting the care he needs. And then the real life issue of somebody that is tasked with experiencing terrible things, like journalists all over the world, that's their job. And then they have to come home and figure out how to deal with it. And that personally resonated with me just because of the field that I'm in. Can you tell me a little bit about what it was like to film and if you did anything special to prepare for that in particular?
So I'm glad you brought that one up, actually, because when I episode 5, as you've seen it, is slightly different from the original script.
Oh, interesting.
And when I read the original script, it was the best thing. It was the best script I'd ever read of anything. I've read God knows how many scripts. It was the best one I've ever read, and it shook up people. Amongst studio and network, you know, politics here and there plays a big part in television these days.
Right.
And it takes a very brave person to allow certain stories to be told, because, you know, people have livelihoods, you know, producers have, executives and whatnot in certain positions have families to look after, and those decisions that they make, you know, could jeopardize that. So it takes a brave person to have a good understanding of what, you know, what is a story that needs to be told. And so there was a bit of back and forth. I think there was a bit of fear that kicked in to certain people, but eventually they managed to get the script closer to what it had originally been, because it went through a couple of changes. So when it came to filming it was a story that, as you say, it touched on an issue that is not touched on very often. And I think a big part of that is if you're a nation who prides itself on your military standing, you need people to be as susceptible, is not the right word, but as agreeable to being part of that. And what tends to happen is to do that you need to hide some of the consequences,
right,
which people just aren't, just young people,
yeah,
just are not made aware of. And so you then, you know, it's dressed up with a lot of words like honor and what have you, and there's a lot of honor in serving your country. And I want to iterate the fact that I'm not playing down that aspect of the bravery involved,
right? But it is a sacrifice. It's a euphemism.
It's a sacrifice.
Yeah.
And it's more to do with the fact that people aren't made aware of that sacrifice. And I think there are certain... I think there's maybe a number of people who would perhaps think twice about making that sacrifice if they were aware of some of the implications, some of the possibilities.
Okay.
And so that episode just highlighted something which, as I say, I don't think a lot of people would be aware of, the depth of the repercussions sometimes with I mean, this deals very heavily with PTSD and
right.
And yeah, ends with a man taking his life because of some very real circumstances. And then when you bring that into Damien's world, yeah, the way that it was written by Casey Perry, who's incredibly talented writer, and I fell for that story straight away.
Hmm.
Because of there is real issue, a big part because there's real issues that just aren't tackled that often.
Mm-hmm. Before we let you go, I do want to talk a little bit about the finale. It's such a kind of a punch to the gut. You guys don't hold anything back, which is interesting because a lot of times showrunners tend to stretch storylines out. Like you might have seen Damien struggle with this destiny for 2 seasons.
Yeah.
And you guys don't do that at all. So, as an actor, was that a point of intrigue for you? Did you think it was the right choice? Would you have liked to have seen Damien struggle a little more?
Well, here's what I'll say with regards to that choice to stretch things out. I think that can quite often be a case that someone doesn't back themselves. They don't trust that they're going to be able to tell a story beyond the original concept that they came up with. And we've all witnessed that in TV mm-hmm. shows. We've all seen things get dragged out. There's a massive example, which I'm not going to say, which was a very popular show, mm-hmm. which oh, God, it's painful thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to veer away
We can give the textbook Jump the Shark Happy Days example if you want.
I mean, there's Jumping the Shark. There's just I think, a lack of... I think when it gets drawn out, it's due to a lack of confidence. And you could mm-hmm. say that lack of confidence comes because there's a genuine lack of ability in showrunners. I don't think that's the case with Glenn. Glenn has the ability to tell stories, and he has the ability to come up with a lot of ideas. And so when you have that confidence in yourself, why not back yourself? Why not tell the story? And just respect the fans, you know, fans mm-hmm. of shows, you can really frustrate an audience sometimes with certain things that you leave, you know, the end of a series on, and it's done purely to try and hook them in for another year, as opposed to actually being honest and telling a story. There's a massive example of that, actually, that's oh, I'm not even going to go down that road.
I can think of a couple.
I think that's about confidence. Mm. And Glenn, he's not cocky about it, and I think he wouldn't even be considering it as being confident. He just knows that he is able to tell a story, and I don't think that's always the case with some showrunners.
Mm. And then also, I mean, like when we leave off Damien, he's kind of... for the greater good, I guess you could say, has agreed to be this Antichrist. He's signed the deed. He's given his soul to save his friend. Looking forward, mm-hmm. because we're all hoping you guys get picked up for season 2, where would you like to see Damien's character go?
Well, entering into the warped mind of Glenn Mazzara there. I think, obviously the end of... 10, the guilt that I think Damien carries from Kelly, not necessarily, I don't think it even necessarily it's because of his feelings towards her. I think it's just more a guilt towards the idea that he dragged her into something.
Hmm.
And then all of a sudden he's dragged her sister into the same thing, or it probably feels like that to him, even though, you know, there was a lot of her sort of playing the part of getting involved, getting her nose involved and stuff. She could have walked away.
Mm-hmm.
But that level of guilt, I think, is crushing, and therefore you see the response from Damien of making, as Glenn called it, the Faustian bargain, you know, doing anything mm-hmm. he could, because, you know, the alternative is living with the guilt of having killed 2 sisters of a family, and just, you know, having destroyed that family. I think moving forward, I mean, the great thing I have is that I have a lot of trust in how Glenn tells stories. And so I kind of feel that, you know, whatever he's going to come up with, I'm going to go, yes, I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to relish the chance to play a lot of the various sort of notes that you know, he tries to draw out of the character. And again, that's part of that sort of wonderful mind that he has, that he's able to come up with such a wide spectrum and investigate so many different areas of the character and the world.
Right, so because you've got the supernatural, you've got the real world, you've got the world of religion. It's all very tied in. So we have a segment at the beginning of our show called How We Hype.
How We Hype.
How We Hype, because we are hype podcast.
Right.
And that's where we tell our listeners what we've been doing in pop culture, if we've seen a movie or, you know, been listening to an album or things like that. So
seems
we just want to know.
Away we're going to be struggling because pop culture, popular culture.
Well, it doesn't have to be popular now. God knows that I'm terrible at this
right,
too.
Right, I was going to say, I don't think I've ever.
Yeah. So let's do favorites. How about that?
In terms of popularity in my life.
Favorite movie.
Favorite movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's. I answered this the other day, and a close second at that time was Fight Club, and Usual Suspects was first. I think that's where I'm at still.
Very nice.
But it's one of those. It's one of those things that is always interchangeable depending on what mood you're in.
That's true.
Let's sit with those two at the moment.
All right, sounds good. A favorite book. Do you have one?
Favorite book. This is. I mean, if I'm allowed to say, like, the entire series of Harry Potter.
Yes, everyone will love you now.
There we go. Because I feel like you can't really pick out one because it's a story that
exactly.
Know, is told.
Exactly.
Quite
you'd have to bring all of them to the desert island with you. You couldn't just bring one.
Yeah, I mean, because you'd be like, oh, what happens next? Or you'd be like, oh, what happens before? Or, you know, bring the whole lot and then, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll go with that as a series.
That's a good answer. Is that something that, like, you never auditioned for Harry Potter or anything like that, right?
Were
you
too? No.
Would you have liked to?
I'm trying to think of a role I could have done in Harry Potter. I mean, the answer's yes, because it was, you know, such a wonderful franchise, but oh no, I tell you exactly what I did actually. When I was younger, much younger, I sent off a picture and a letter I don't know who the casting director was, and I wasn't even an actor at that stage, but they were asking for people when they were casting the first movie. I remember sending off a letter and a picture of myself with regards to Cedric Diggory.
Oh, you would have made a good Cedric Diggory.
Cedric Diggory.
That damn and Rod Pattinson
guy. Yeah, he gets about, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
But that was... I wasn't very old then. When I didn't... You know, that was in the times when I didn't understand how you get cast for stuff.
So would you consider yourself a Hufflepuff then?
No, not at all.
No, what would you...
Too caring to...
Okay.
I would... What would I consider myself? I mean, it sounds far too commercial to say Gryffindor, but I'm not smart enough to be a Ravenclaw.
I feel that.
I'm not really underhanded enough to be, or cunning enough to be a Slytherin. And I don't sort of have that caring motherly nature, but I do have a foolhardy courageousness that,
there you go.
You know, sorry.
And Gryffindors can be very foolish. This is what I tell people all the time. There are bad parts of being Gryffindor.
There are bad parts.
Yeah. You always run into things heart first sometimes,
see,
not necessarily
I'm probably
head first.
All the bad parts of
see,
Gryffindor.
Me too.
All right, congratulations.
Yes, I know, exactly. We're terrible people. So we talked about
books. I
always
play for the Gryffindor cricket team when we have...
Oh, do you?
Yeah, there's a game every year.
Okay.
Where it's Gryffindor versus Slytherin. And I've been the Gryffindor captain for the last 2 years. Those are the 2 years we've lost.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Your bad luck.
But I'm all about heart and soul in cricket. I don't actually sort of play it that well, but I, you know, I chat a lot.
Okay.
I try and encourage.
Yeah, you're like the coach.
Coach, we lost to your man. What's Tom's last name?
Oh, Tom Felton.
Yeah, we lost to Tom Felton.
Like, oh, okay.
He captained Slytherin last year, and
very fitting.
They wiped the floor with us.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, Gryffindor.
Matt
lost
Lewis,
the house
Matt
cup.
Lewis was there. He was vice captain. Me and Neville Longbottom didn't quite didn't quite hold our end up for, that's the, too for bad. The Gryffindor folk, but we'll be back.
I would be so lost in cricket, but it's similar to baseball, right?
Yeah, there's running, there's a ball. To, you just have to throw it at the ground as opposed to, you know, straight in a straight line.
All right, maybe I could catch on. Yeah. One day.
And you only have to run in two directions.
Oh, there's no three, right? Three bases and a home. What about TV shows? Is there something that you just binged or a TV show that you really just love?
There's the obvious ones. You've got Sherlock, you've got Luther. I rocketed through Mr. Robot, which was terrific. Game of Thrones, of course. Who's not watching that? And I think that's me done.
It's a good list. It's a good list.
Yeah, it's all right. Mm-hmm. It's all right.
We got a little bit of everything.
If people are looking out for a show that they haven't heard of, dig out something called The Shadow Line.
Okay.
It's 7 or 8 years old now, but it's not 7 or 8 years old. What are we, 2016? It's about 5 years old now. There's something called The Shadow Line. Chiwetel Ejiofor, Christopher Eccleston, Ray Spall.
It's a good cast.
It's a very good cast. Mm-hmm. And it's a fantastic, it's like a 7-part sort of miniseries, extended miniseries. That's one of the best things I've ever seen on TV.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the last segment in How We Hype. Also my favorite. Song, artist, album you just can't get enough of.
Crikey. See, what tends to happen is I'll hear a song and just kind of get it one by one on my my iPod. This could be embarrassing.
Play some iPod shuffle roulette.
I mean, that's just, that would have me,
you know, I have a theory that there's no guilty pleasure music, because you should just like jam out to what you love and then, you know,
jam out to what you love.
Exactly. I have no shame.
Oh, well, this, okay, I don't know if you can play this on your podcast, but there's one there's one particular, if I hear this, I just have to dance.
You have to dance, all right.
Like, quite often I'll, hang on.
All right.
The trumpet for this, I'm going to move this on. Hold on, you can edit this. Let's move this on. I wouldn't be a very good DJ.
I was going to say DJ Bradley James, introduce the track and artist.
This is Light It Up. We're getting there. This is the bit of the song. It's only for this little bit.
All right. This is your go-to move then, huh?
This is my go-to move.
Cool, so if I ever see you at a club, I have to just walk towards you and do this.
If you there we go, that and so forth. What an embarrassing section, and I'm so pleased.
So what you all can't see is that Bradley and I just had a dance off, and it was glorious.
There you go. My dance move specifically. I went to I went to Australia a few years ago, and with some of the knights from a show I did called Merlin, and we got everybody to do the Harlem Shake.
Lovely, and classic,
all the
iconic.
Way through the Harlem Shake, I did that move.
Just that move.
in tribute to a man called Freddie Stroma, who has...
is also in Potter.
He's also in
Potter. You just chill with all the Potter crew.
Well, it wasn't necessarily... I don't think me and Freddie are friends because he's been in Harry Potter. I mean, that would be an interesting way of getting my friendship group. Mm-hmm. But Freddie has a very embarrassing moment in his life that involves that dance move, and so I essentially just attributed.
Perfect.
I tried to get as many Australians doing this move, and then I sent the video to him afterwards, and he was just so pleased that I'd, you know, subtly embarrass him.
Beautiful.
Without calling him out on it. I'm calling him out on it now. Yes. Obviously, by talking about it.
All right, you guys, that actually wraps up the interview portion of this episode. Unfortunately, Bradley had to duck out before we could properly say goodbye to him, but we really do want to thank him for being on, and we really hope you enjoyed that. Coming up next, we're actually going to introduce our second guest for this episode. When I was thinking about who I wanted to bring on to hash out Damien and that ridiculously crazy finale, I knew there was only one person that could do this justice. So I tapped my best friend, Michelle, who is super awesome. She's a friend of Hypeable. She's a friend of the show. So I knew she was going to do great. So we want to welcome her now. She's making her hype debut.
Hello.
Hello.
This is like nice and exciting.
Yeah, we're going to have so much fun. So you guys, Michelle actually just finished watching the episode right now, which is so exciting because I've been dying to talk to somebody about this.
I need your initial thoughts because there's so much that went on in this finale.
In short, oh my freaking God. yeah, I pretty much just immediately snapchatted Pam going, no, wait, oh my God, oh my God. Fantastic, especially way to end off a season, you know, hopefully to get that renewal. Really amazingly solid last episode, and I'm dying for more.
Yeah, so what I wanted to talk about was that pretty much leading up to this, like, of course, we're both following, like, Glenn and everybody on Twitter. They've just been saying, you know, all your questions will be answered during the finale. But I kind of feel like even though some of the bigger plot points were answered, like we finally saw Damian come to terms with his destiny, there's so much that I still have questions about. Am I the only one?
No. Because it's a different Damian, like him rising up from that grave. You know, how it was completely different, and, you know, taking, he saw new ways of thinking, you know, does that kind of make sense? And so for him to, like, grasp that freaking power, that's what got me, when he literally just started pretty much shooting all the soldiers, and it was quite clearly him this time, not like before, where weird things were happening, but he wasn't necessarily controlling them, whereas this was 100% controlling. Like, I'm so interested in that change in mindset, I guess, and just all the different characters. And oh my God, Rutledge, the way she has played him is like, oh no, I have questions for everyone, 100%. But I mean, there are definitely a lot of questions that were answered, which is always a nice way to end the season.
Yeah, totally. And of course, like, we do want to mention, and as I'm sure a lot of you know, Glenn Mazzara has come off of things like The Walking Dead, so he clearly knows how to, first of all, be ruthless when it comes to just killing people off, and also just when it comes to answering questions, but also leaving people wanting more. I think that that's one of his strong points for sure. And I know you're a big Walking Dead fan, so I'm sure that you noticed similarities in terms of the way that he runs Damian versus Walking Dead. So, because they're both kind of like horror, but they're different horror.
Yeah, absolutely. You could totally get that. And it was, I don't know, it was just a really nice, it was a real, like I said before, really solid way to finish it, where it just leaves you wanting more, but you're still satisfied. Definitely with the Walking Dead element, same thing, minus this last season, because that just left everyone, obviously not with Glenn. but yeah, with Damien, it just, I don't know. For me personally, that just, by far, my favorite episode. I know episode 5 is yours, Pam. I don't know if that has changed now with this last episode, but this one just got me. The amount of people, I was just shocked. So many shocking moments.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk a little bit more about favorites later, but definitely, like, I think episode 5 still, like, it's just, like, it's stuck with me. And you guys know, like, hype listeners, you know, I watch so much TV. So for me to say that I'm still thinking about a particular episode, like, weeks and weeks and weeks after it's aired, like, clearly it has struck a chord. I have issues. But I do want to, you were talking about how, like, it's so interesting, like, to think about what Damien is going to be like now that he's officially, like, he's given up his soul to be the Antichrist. He is accepted. Like, and that is something that interests me too. But when you talk about power, like, that's not even, like, I feel like what we saw at the beginning of the episode where he massacres John Lyon's whole team, that's like the tip of the iceberg. And that's him, like, actually trying, but not trying, because he still doesn't really know how to use this stuff. So I'm wondering if it, like, if he's going to have to get, like, Antichrist lessons, or he's just going to automatically know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's one of those things, cause I was thinking about that too. I was like, is he going to just, you know, is there half of it where it's just inherent and he just knows how to control it? Cause the thing is, when he's massacring all those people in the beginning, it's to protect, you know, it's under a good guise. And I mean, him giving up his soul is also under that, like, goodness, which is just such a fantastic dichotomy that they gave, you know what I mean? So I love that, like, to get him, get this good character over it. But yeah, I think it's going to be, I feel like it's mostly going to be inherent. Like, again, I think when he came out of that grave, something was just switched. And he felt, I don't know, he felt possession of his, you know, destiny, I guess, more than he did before. But I'm sure he's going to have some lessons from Rutledge for sure as well.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And of course, you're bringing up that kind of like the final moments in the penultimate episode of this season where Sister Greta tries to exorcise him. And obviously, it does not go well. That is an understatement. That is like the understatement of the whole show. But for me, when I was watching that, it was almost like you could see like the horror in his face. And then it's almost like he went all like shell-shocked Stockholm syndrome. And he just kind of like gave up, like could not scream anymore. And then he emerged and something, like you said, had switched. And from then on, it's just like, boom, boom, boom. But, you know, the interesting thing, I did want to talk a little bit about Simone because she has really kind of become one of the forefront characters, especially in the back half of the season. And if you go back on Hypeable, we did an interview with Glenn Mazzara recently where he talked about how they were really excited to activate her. So the thing that interests me about her is that she, like, even though Damien is kind of like being pulled in by this power, and now he kind of is fully being pulled in since he's accepted his destiny, she almost kind of humanizes him, and she's the only person that gets him to stop. So do you have any like theories or thoughts about why that is? Like, do you think like maybe she has some kind of special something in that way? Because she also is like not fazed at all. You never see her like go crazy. Like, it's all for you, Damien. Like that one girl on the bridge, like she never does that. So she's like almost immune.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when she was in the trailer. But now I'm wondering, she literally has his blood in her. Is that, you know, is that going to change anything? But I definitely think there could be some very interesting backstory to her. I mean, obviously she saw those signs. I don't know what episode, but the bleeding heart and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I was like, pretty amazed that she wasn't being controlled by him. And obviously she spends the most amount of time. But so did Imani. And he kind of had that, you know, he kind of had the worshiping, but he didn't full out have it. You know what I mean? But I definitely think there could be room, to really explore that. However, now she's got his blood in her, you know, as that was pretty much the ultimate sacrifice for his soul. So I would wonder if that would change anything. But to use the word dichotomy again, I think that would be such an interesting, you know, dichotomy to have her be that, like, humanizing, like you said. And obviously Damien's at his tipping point. He's kind of going over. So to have those two constantly, like, battle it out, I think would be really interesting.
Yes, I think so too. And you're right. I mean, for that, I'm sure that they would, I mean, hopefully they get a season two. I can totally see that coming into play because I feel like for every action, there has to be kind of a reaction. Like, it can't just be as easy as I've brought somebody back to life. Like, anytime in any show ever, or any book ever, whenever somebody gets brought back to life, there are consequences for that. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what those are in this instance.
Yeah, and especially since she's literally being brought back. She's not being brought back by, like, God. Speaking of, though, who was brought back on that end? I totally, with the whole ending, I totally forgot about the hand in the grave with the nuns. But yeah, especially since Simone is being brought back by, you know, what we would assume is not the greatest powers, how is that going to affect her? But that totally could be a nice little tie-in if there is something more to her and why she doesn't, you know, fall under his spell. That would definitely be such an awesome little, like, tete-a-tete kind of thing happening.
And the only thing I can think of is just because there's so much religious connotations in this show, they do such a great job of bringing that in and also kind of showing kind of both sides to that. Like, they like definitely play devil's advocate, no pun intended. There's that great scene between Sister Greta and Anne where she is talking about how, you know, God isn't all like white light. There are shades of gray there. And I think that that is one of the best things about this show is, like, regardless of what your own beliefs are, if you just look at it as a piece of work, it does a great job of making you think with the writing. And that is definitely one of the most thoughtful scenes in this entire episode, for sure. At least it was for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought it was such an interesting, like you said, devil's advocate way of putting things, you know, like the, you know, Satan only has the 10 deaths, whereas God has X amount, you know. But yeah, that scene was so, with all that's happening in the finale, that small, quiet, like character, you know, driven scene just really hit it on the nail, at least for me as well. And kind of gave you that, I don't know, that background a little bit. Obviously, this is like the most emotion I feel like we've really gotten out of Rutledge with, you know, her daughter dying and stuff. So yeah, to see that side of her and the sacrifice that both of these women have made is pretty, is very interesting.
Definitely. And actually, speaking of Rutledge's daughter, Victoria, we were talking about episode 9 last week when I was out in LA with you. And one of the questions that you brought up was like, was it really necessary for Victoria to die? Like, have you thought any more on that? Like, do you have any more theories on that? Because I know that we talked about this for a while.
Yeah, I don't know if I have any more theories. I'm still a little confused at the whole tree thing. I was like, is there symbolism that I'm just not getting? That one confused me. And it was also so interesting because she was almost alive. You know what I mean? She almost made it out. But I don't know. That was all just kind of like, it was very interesting how all the characters reacted. Cause you know, you had the sister trying to save her soul, but at the same time, not saving her mortal body. So you had that. And then you had Simone kind of just leaving her out in the middle of nowhere. And then that's the only thing I didn't understand was just why the tree kind of came out of her that way, but I could just be missing something. But I don't have any solid theory at that point.
Right. And it is possible that maybe just because that is like, that happens very close to the moment where, you know, like we talked about before, this kind of switch goes off in Damien's mind when he's down there in this grave being exorcised. And maybe she just got caught in the crossfire when, like, the power burst out of him. That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, actually, no, that makes 100% sense because it's coming from the ground. That actually, all right, I'm good with that one. That totally makes sense. It looks like he's releasing, you know, and as he's attempting almost, I feel like he almost got exorcised, right? Like, had she not interrupted it, it might, something was happening, something was occurring, you know what I mean? So yeah, that's probably it. That makes perfect sense. Thanks, Pam.
I try. I mean, I guess the only way we would really be able to answer this question is to talk to Mr. Glenn Mazzara himself. But he did mention again, like I said, I think I talked about this before, when I talked to him a couple weeks ago, he kind of left me wondering, like, what happens when you exorcise the Antichrist? And we've got our answer. Apparently, like, you just exorcise the devil and he comes to the surface. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. Because there was so much happening. And also it was like a moment for Damien to be like, no, I literally have something inside me. Like, I've suspected this entire time. Clearly things are not right. But then to see these things coming out as you know that you're being exorcised, I think also was like kind of like a, yeah, I haven't been making this up. I'm 100% not crazy. Does that make sense?
Totally. Right. And like, I mean, in that sense, you're right. Like, everything in season one has been leading up to this moment because we've seen him struggle time and time again with whether or not this is something that he wants. I mean, he's attempted suicide to try and get out of it. He has tried to stop people from killing him. You know, in episode 9, he tries to stop Sister Greta because he just keeps telling her, if not me, then somebody else. And again, because we are human and like we want to see the good in people, it's very, very easy to say like, oh, like he's coming from like a good place. But at the same time, like if we've learned anything about this show is to not take everything at face value, and you're supposed to question everything. So like maybe that wouldn't have even been like it might not even be the best decision, you know?
Well, then there's also the whole if you know, the Vatican didn't come after him, or if, you know, like a almost fulfilling prophecy kind of thing. So that, and that kind of gets into a circular argument, you know what I mean? But I just feel like the last, because, you know, even though you know that something is off, you know, it's mystical and, you know, obviously heavily religious, all that kind of stuff. In this day and age, you wouldn't, you'd be like, no, that's not right. That's not, I'm crazy. And even though you're 99% sure, I just feel like he got that, like, all right, I'm 110% the Antichrist. There's no going back. But you did speak about, you know, the good in him. And it's not like he just relinquished himself because, you know, he was like, well, let's try this Antichrist thing. It was the, I have to save her. I cannot kill her, you know, moment, which is a very heroic moment, where he ultimately gives himself, like, his soul out. And I don't know, for me, that was just very powerful. Amazingly acted scene, because I pretty much had my hands over my mouth, like, in shock for that. But yeah, very, very interesting. I really love where they're going, if I haven't said it already.
Yes, that's a very good point. And when we spoke to Bradley earlier, he also mentioned that, you know, it was kind of one of those things where Damien already blames himself for Kelly's death. So it's almost like, not her, that's two sisters I would have killed. And that's just awful for him. Like, aside from clearly the emotional tie he and Simone have, it's just like almost too much guilt on his conscience, which is very, very interesting in and of itself.
Yeah, especially since he knows that he can't save Imani now, you know, that's like everyone is dead. That was the big shocker for me. I didn't think they were going to bring Simone back. I was like, we literally just killed everyone in the entire season except for Rutledge and Damien. But yeah, that was definitely just that unhinged moment. Oh, fantastic. So good. I see. I'm still coming off my high. Pam got to see it, I don't know, almost how long ago? A while ago.
I saw it on Friday, only a couple days ago.
Okay, that's still enough. I'm still like, right. It's 1:14 in the morning. I worked all day. I'm buzzing right now. So, yeah, I'm coming at it at a very interesting angle.
That's right. You see what we do for you guys? We podcast at late hours to get you guys the show when we know you're going to want it most. But you actually brought up Imani, and I did want to talk about him and Sister Greta. Also, another wonderful moment between the two when you see that it's like breaking Imani's heart to have to stuff her into this grave. And then she just says it's okay because, you know, she's a kind person. She's like a woman of God, and like you wouldn't expect anything less of her because she really does think that she's coming from the best place.
Yeah, absolutely. That whole, you know, even to see Rutledge and, you know, scream like, no, I don't know. That was so interesting for me because you like Rutledge as like an audience, you know, member because she's so interesting. And obviously Barbara Hershey, amazing. But to see it, like, she really does love Damien. But yeah, just seeing Sister Greta, that was such an interesting moment to me. And, you know, like, realizing she hasn't just sacrificed herself, she sacrificed all of her sisters, and now she sacrificed this man who is just in the crossfires. I don't know. It was a very, very beautiful moment. Though, I was like, come on, sister, like, let him, you know, give that guilt away. So, yeah, I really, again, the quiet moments, you know, it's not what I think of immediately, you know, coming off this episode, but as we're revisiting them, just really well done.
That is so, so true. And of course, like, we get a little tease of the idea that maybe one of them has survived this buried alive thing, which totally gives me the heebie-jeebies, by the way. That's like my worst fear.
Right? Being buried alive. I was like, just let them die. They're going to die anyway. You don't have to bury them alive. No. Yeah, so I'm assuming it's Sister Greta? Is that what you're assuming as well?
I thought it was maybe Imani. I don't know. Like, I don't think it was a kill shot. I think they wanted him to go slowly, so assuming he can dig himself out.
Well, that's what I figured, but then that whole prayer, you know, to God that she does, That's what I was thinking, because, I mean, you would have suffocated by then, because I would assume that it would take a while to fill the grave back in, but I'm no expert.
That's so true. I don't know. I guess we're going to have to see when, A&E, when.
When. I like that.
Damien gets renewed.
When. When, hashtag renew Damien.
Exactly, exactly. But definitely, like, that is something that I would be interested to find out, like, because you would think that there's no walking away from that, but they wouldn't have put that lowly hand coming out of the grave if, you know, if not for a reason. So I guess we should talk about one of the big deaths we had in this episode. We said goodbye to John Lyons, the wonderful Scott Wilson. Herschel didn't make it.
I was, yeah. Like Pam mentioned, huge Walking Dead fan. I mean, who isn't? I was like, no, Herschel! But also, like I mentioned to you off air, is that really well done with the promo, because I kept waiting to see that scene where Damien obviously accepts his fate and John Lyons is behind him with Rutledge. I kept waiting for that scene, and obviously it's not quite there. It's a great, like, little throw. I don't know. It was just, I liked it. It was very well done. Does that make sense?
It does. I do want to talk a little bit about John, because, of course, we've seen him and Anne butt heads throughout the whole season. Damien kind of basically tells him to go to hell. Anne clearly doesn't want him around, but he is still, like, you know, adamant that he has always had the best intentions for Damien. So now that he's gone, I guess it doesn't really matter. But just for, like, our sake, like, do we really think that he had the best intentions at heart, or do you think that they were more nefarious?
I don't know, because I'm like that with Rutledge as well. I think she really does care, but she's so fantastically manipulative about it that she also obviously has her own gains. But I went back and forth the whole season. I would say with Lyons, I'm a little less inclined to believe that he was all for Damien. I think that he... What is it? What is the line where he wants to wear one of the crowns? I'm blanking on the line. But I do believe that. I think he supports Damien up to the point where Damien's going to get him where he wants to be, if that makes sense. Whereas Rutledge, I think, is a little bit more in worship and in awe of Damien. But yeah, I was so surprised he went so quickly. Yeah, did not see that one coming. At all.
Yeah, that is very true. I think that that Rutledge specifically, you know, Anne has pretty much given up her life, but not really. I mean, we assume, actually, she is one of the characters that I really hope gets more of a backstory, because, you know, she has this daughter. So obviously she had some semblance of a life that didn't just involve making sure Damien stayed safe. But at the same time, you know, we see her own daughter say that she's always been second fiddle to Damien. So clearly she sacrificed a lot. And I really do think that, you know, towards the end there, she really, like, is more motherly towards him than anything else. Like, she is in awe, but she has really come to care for him in a way that I don't think any of us really saw coming, because she was such a fantastically creepy character at the beginning that just kind of knew too much for comfort.
Yeah, yeah, I totally see that mothering side. That, yeah, her in the finale definitely steps, I don't know, it changes my perspective of her a little bit, and definitely steps into that more mothering, well, especially now that her own daughter is gone. Feel like it's one of those things where she's felt that loss, and she's puts all of that loss and hurt and anger into this thing that she sacrificed everything for. So I think that's where that, maybe that mothering side really comes to fruition. More than we've seen before. And we also know a lot of about Damien now. Obviously not everything, but, you know, whereas before she was just kind of this looming, how do you know so much? Why do you know so much, character. So yeah, definitely see the mothering part.
So another person that was very much on Damien's tail pretty much the whole season was Detective Shay. But I think he's kind of started to realize that maybe he's on Team Damien now, if his kneeling before the Antichrist is anything to go by.
Frickin' Detective Shay is all. That's pretty much been me this entire season, with frickin' Detective Shay. Because it is one of the things where you see where he's coming from, but also like, come on, it can't be him, even though it's obviously connected. Though they hinted so many times about something that has unhinged him in the past. So when they renew Damien, I'm really excited to hear about it and see about it and what his life was and why he was having to see the psychiatrist and all that kind of stuff, because he's clearly got a very rich background. With him kneeling, though, I can't decide whether I think it's him finally realizing, like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't have just done that. Maybe I should have, realized that there's weird stuff happening, but it's not necessarily, you know, this kid's fault. Or if it is the he's coming under Damien's spell, he's just seen, like, you know, if he doesn't know too much, he's just seen an act of God. Obviously, it's on the other side of the spectrum, and it's, you know, an act of Satan. But he doesn't necessarily know that, you know what I mean?
Yes. No, that's so true, because I didn't even think about that. Like, I just assumed that he was pledging his allegiance, but you're right, he could just be begging for mercy.
Yeah, in his eyes, in general, all of the actors' eyes, like, just did an amazing job. You could feel everything that they were feeling. But just in his eyes, it was that, for me at least, it was like that begging for mercy, that, I don't know, I can't choose which one I think it was. I'll have to rewatch it again. But yeah, I feel like it was the, oh crap, what did I do? Because obviously his direct action is what unleashes the beast, is what gives Damien that final push over to become the Antichrist officially. So I do wonder if he realizes that. He has to realize something. Because, I mean, he's a smart guy. He's been pushed to Crazy Town recently, a little bit on his own, a little bit with the help of other people. But I'm so interested, because obviously the, you know, powers that are on Damien's side haven't killed him, where they've killed everyone else who was kind of Damien's, like, butting heads with Damien. So they didn't kill him, but they've always been around, you know what I mean? So I'm very interested in why that is. And then, you know, maybe those, you know, crazy powers knew that he was going to be the catalyst or what, but I just feel like there is a lot to learn, from the detective's story. And, you know, maybe he has something like Simone does, where he has this other part of him or something. I don't know.
You're totally right. And I don't see his journey being done quite yet, because if it had, he would have just been dead in the crossfire. Like, I feel like Damien would have just offed him after his bullet accidentally hit Simone instead of him.
Well, not even just that. Like, he's been butting heads with Damien this entire time, and everyone else, you know, even Kelly. When Kelly just, like, barely pissed Damien off because he obviously wanted to protect her, she was gone. You know, all this, like, stuff. He's been in his face all the time, you know, making accusations, all this kind of stuff. And yet, even though, like, the dogs, you know, the Hounds of Hell were there and obviously played a part, they didn't take him. They didn't take his son. They didn't take his husband. They kind of left him alone, other than making him go a little bit crazier, you know? Obviously, the girl on the swing in this episode, making him think that he hit his son. You know what I mean? Like, it's, they're very weird things. So there's definitely something with him. And I think that probably will tie in to whatever that backstory is, where something happened at his other precinct or whatever that is. So, because at first I was like getting a little bit annoyed with his character. I was like, would you just back off? But the more and more I saw of him, and especially with this episode and everything that happened, I'm so intrigued at how he's going to fit in, I guess, to this new regime, this new Damien Antichrist regime, because he's obviously got quite a part in it.
Totally. And I guess, like, the last thing we should probably do is kind of look forward and think about where we're going to go from here. Before everything goes down in the graveyard, Damien is hell-bent on traveling to Israel, I believe, because that's where his father traveled to get answers, and he thinks he might be able to get answers there. I'm not really sure if he would still do that, because I kind of feel like he was going to get answers on the Antichrist thing, but if he's already accepted, like, I'm not sure if that's a journey that he'd necessarily need to take now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And listeners, forgive me, just got finished watching it, but I'm trying to think. The Catholic Church has four of the knives, and Damien's side has two, right? And I believe there's seven? Don't crucify me.
There are seven. Ho ho, crucify.
I know. It just slipped out.
There are seven. So that is a very good point. And I was counting them too. So here's what I was thinking as well. So the seven daggers need to be punctured in certain places to defeat the Antichrist. So does that mean like Damien is a cat now? Like he has seven lives instead of nine, but like six because he's already been stabbed once?
Well, no, I think they... Again, forgive. I think they have to be at the same time. I don't think that they have to be all at once. I mean, I could be wrong. I'll definitely do like a little rewatch, but I feel like they have to be placed in this like certain areas, and like maybe the last one is the heart. And in that case, he not only dies, but so does the Antichrist. It can't just move on to another part, like person. So obviously that's going to be a war to have, each side is going to want possession of those daggers. So that's definitely a potential going forward. I see that potential again with Detective Shay, Damien, seeing if he has any more humanity now that he's accepted his role as the Antichrist, seeing how much and maybe how little humanity he does have. And like, again, like you mentioned earlier, seeing how much Simone brings out of him, possibly.
Right. And I think, like, and you know, to be honest with you, that's like the one thing that I've been pondering since this whole journey started, which is that, like, is there any hope for Damien to be saved? And I feel like that's too optimistic to say yes, because I don't know. But I just have been thinking about this.
Yeah, it's definitely... And I think that is like one of the points of the show is you are rooting for the bad guy, but he's not bad. Though that look at the end when Damien is covered in blood, and he's just staring at the camera is a very, nefarious and dark look. It's a, yes, I've accepted. And yes, I would dare to say I'm happy about it. Kind of thing. So that's interesting. But I think something that's been so strong in the show that I think Glenn's done such an amazing job on is keeping that, like, every time we learn something that's a little bit not great about Damien, it's counteracted with something that is really nice. And I think you did an interview. Well, I know you did an interview, but with Bradley at WonderCon, where he said, you know, saving that kid is, you know, what if he's the Hitler 2.0? So there's that whole side of being an Antichrist where you could be doing great deeds, and they're great deeds, but what becomes of them? You know what I mean? So definitely very interesting there.
That is a good point. That's a very good point, because you're right. And it kind of comes back to that whole, first of all, to quote Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. But second of all, even if you think you're making the right choice, like, look at the butterfly effect. Like, it doesn't always pan out the way you want it to. So
yeah, there's definitely the, you know, the path to hell is paved with good intentions kind of thing that they can go down, which I think they've done a kind of fantastic job so far.
And of course, like, you know, it's so, I hate to say this, I'm sure it's a very serious moment, but just thinking about like a bunch of Catholic priests packing up shop and like going to rid the world of the Antichrist, like, I'm imagining ninja priests, and it's like obviously it's much more serious than that. I feel like that's a threat that's going to be brought up in season two as well. I think I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is just coming from someone who is not well-versed in Catholicism. And I don't know. There was just a lot of like little symbolism. I think I Snapchatted you during the episode when Simone was cleaning, you know, Damien's feet. I know that that's like kind of a very symbolic gesture. So I parting from what we were saying, but I'm like really excited to kind of look back and see different, like just little subtle things that can be symbolized when you're dealing with such, you know, huge things as, you know, Catholicism and all that kind of stuff.
No, that's a very good point, because you're right. It does play a big big role in terms of symbolism. During the Last Supper, Jesus bathes his disciples' feet before he, you know, carries the cross and eventually gets crucified. So if you think about it in that sense, and this is what they've kind of been saying throughout the course of the whole season, that Damien's journey kind of very much mirrors Christ's rise, you know, from somebody that dies for his people and then eventually is resurrected. So looking at it in that sense, like it is very similar to Damien's journey, especially in this episode. So he, you know, his feet get bathed or whatever. And you know, there's the whole exorcism thing. And you could say, I guess, that he rises or the beast rises within and he has accepted his destiny, similar to the way Christ did when he died on the cross and then was resurrected during Easter.
Yeah. And literally bathed in blood. but yeah. Hashtag renew Damien. I'm just going to keep saying it. Let's go. We'll be at the band.
You're a one woman promo team. I love it. So yeah, I mean, like, overall, really, really strong episode. I guess we should very quickly, you said that you think that the finale has been your favorite episode. Do you still subscribe to that? Or is there like another particular moment that like really stands out to you that was just like amazing?
I'm going to say I don't know. It is hard coming from like, I just saw it. So I'm still kind of wrapping my head around everything. Yeah, I don't know. I think right now, this is still my favorite episode. Obviously episode 5 was so amazing, and so powerful. But I'm going to say for now, though that could change, I'm going to say 10 was my favorite, though I really loved, last episode as well. So I just think, the emotions that all of the characters were going through and the situations that they are now in that has been, you know, been leading up all season, just really amazingly executed, I guess.
Yes. And like we've been saying throughout the course of this whole discussion, this show really, the place in which they're strongest is these subtle nuances and the character development and the juxtaposition. And I really, really hope that going forward, we see a lot of the same thing as the series progresses, hopefully. So yeah, but we would really love to hear what you guys think. So if you wish to do so, you should totally write in and let us know what some of your favorite moments from the series are. Like, let us know what you thought about our discussion. If you have anything to add, maybe have some theories that we didn't bring up, we'd love to hear them. So if you want to do that, we're going to run through our contact information one more time before we wrap things up. For starters, you can always reach us via Twitter. We are at Hypeable Hype on there. We are also at Hypeable Hype on Instagram, where the hosts love to share little snapshots of what they've been doing in terms of entertainment and pop culture throughout the course of the month. Also, that is probably going to be much more populated as we head into summertime because, you know, Comic-Con's coming up and things like that. So there's going to be lots of fun stuff going up on there very soon. If you want to leave us rather lengthy comments, you can do so in the show notes on hypeable.com. And just be sure, if you're commenting on a later date, to leave your comments in the latest episode show notes, even if you're commenting on an older episode, because that just makes sure that we're actually like seeing them and getting your guys' feedback, which is very important to us. And then finally, you can always email us if you want to do that. If you would like to drop us a line via email, you can reach us at the email address hype@hypeable.com. So there's plenty of ways to get in contact with us if you guys want to do that. And you never know, you might even hear your comment read on a future episode of Hype. So that's going to be it for us. We really, really hope you guys enjoyed this Damien special episode of Hype. And we will see you guys next time when we will be back for one of our regular newsy episodes. Okay, guys, take care. My name is Pamela.
And my name's Michelle. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It was so much fun.
It was.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.